To begin, I would like to introduce Dr. Dorado Brooks. As Director of Prostate and Colorectal Cancers for the American Cancer Society, Dr. Brooks is involved in creating and implementing strategies to improve cancer prevention and early detection. He is also engaged in ACS health equity activities and serves as Deputy Editor of the Society's peer-reviewed journal, CA, a cancer journal for clinicians. Prior to joining ACS, Dr. Brooks practiced primary care internal medicine in underserved communities in Dayton, Ohio, and Dallas, Texas. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Dorado Brooks.
Thank you all. I assume everybody knows we're talking about prostate cancer, right? I will assume, since you're here, that you already understand some of the controversies around prostate cancer screening and early detection, and also that you have an understanding of the challenges that clinicians have when trying to address these issues. So I'm going to be talking about how we at the American Cancer Society are trying to work to address some of those challenges in order to allow men to make truly informed decisions related to prostate cancer screening. The only relationship I have to disclose is I'm a full-time employee of the American Cancer Society, and therefore I've got a little bias toward our guidelines as opposed to those of other organizations. I also help write those guidelines, but I will talk briefly about other organizations' stances on screening. So a little background: prostate cancer is the most common cancer in U.S. men other than skin cancers, and the second leading cause of cancer-related death in the U.S., in men in the U.S. And death rates have fallen steadily over the past 20 years or so, which is why a lot of people say, why would we not just screen everyone? We're saving lives with screening. Well, it unfortunately is not quite that simple. It's clear that screening does save lives for some men, but which men, under what circumstances, is open to a lot of debate. And it's also true that much of the change that we've seen in mortality is related to improvement in our ability to treat prostate cancer. The treatments that we offer for men today are light years from those that we had available 20 years ago. So there are some reasons that screening is not an automatic for everyone, and I'll talk very briefly about some of that. So the tests that we use for prostate cancer right now, we're using the same test that we used 20 years ago. Prostate-specific antigen, actually 30 years now for PSA almost, but prostate-specific antigen, which measures a protein that's made by the prostate gland and is excreted into the blood. And PSA, it's important to recognize, is not specific for prostate cancer. As a matter of fact, most men who have an elevated PSA after further evaluation will not be found to have prostate cancer, but their PSA is elevated as a result of age-related enlargement, BPH, or infection, or some other reason. And then the digital rectal exam, which is, you know, finger into the rectum, feeling for lumps, bumps, abnormalities of the prostate gland. The digital rectal exam is helpful in some instances, but recognize that you're feeling, you know, you're only feeling the posterior portion of the gland. So most of the gland is not going to be addressed by that. And if there happens to be some abnormality in that area, then it's helpful. The other issue is that studies of digital rectal exams in primary care settings, which is where screening takes place, show that primary care providers differ tremendously in their ability to actually recognize pathology on a digital rectal exam. So the DRE is, as a screening tool, helpful but far from perfect. It's also important to recognize that the tests that we use for screening are also used for diagnostic purposes. So if you have men who have symptoms suggestive of prostate cancer, then doing a PSA is very different than doing a screening exam. A screening exam is something that you do in a large group of people in whom you have no suspicion that they have disease, and you're trying to separate those who are likely to have the disease from those who are unlikely to have the disease. So using test for screening is a very different proposition than addressing symptoms in patients, and that's for prostate cancer or any other sort of screening exam. And frankly, there is not a discord about the use of PSA and digital rectal exam as diagnostic tools, but it's in the screening realm where the controversy exists. So in terms of screening recommendations from various organizations, this is really very much a moving target in over just the last few years. In 2000, well, the ACS last updated our guidelines in 2010. In 2011, this was basically the state of recommendations. You had some organizations saying, screen everyone. NCCN, the American Urologic Association, the National Medical Association said, screen everybody. American Cancer Society and Preventive Services Task Force at that time said, men should understand what their likelihood is and then make a decision about whether or not to be screened. So that was 2011. 2012, the Preventive Services Task Force just fired a bullet out at everyone and said, no, we should not be doing this anymore. We need to just quit screening men because the harms associated with screening are greater than the benefits. So then suddenly we have the still group saying everybody gets screened, ACS still in the middle here, and the Preventive Services Task Force, nope, just quit it, stop it. And then as of earlier this year, the urologists have now shifted their position. So even the urologists, the specialists who deal with this disease all the time, have taken a look at the evidence and said, you know what, we can't just tell every man to get screened. We need to be having a conversation. And they are now, their recommendations are essentially the same as those as ACS. Every man needs to understand what the potential benefits and limitations are of screening and then make a decision on that basis. Why? Why do we have all this discrepancy? If you talk about screening for breast cancer, you don't have this degree of discord. If you talk about screening for colorectal cancer, every major organization is on board. So why is prostate cancer different? Much less scientific evidence that screening actually saved lives. For mammography, we've got 9 studies that demonstrate a mortality benefit. For prostate cancer, we have essentially 3 large studies, one from the U.S., 2 from Europe. The 2 European studies show some benefit, a mortality benefit. The U.S. study showed no benefit, so we've got split evidence around that. And then add to that the fact that the groups who are at highest risk, African-American men and men with a family history of prostate cancer, we still don't know anything about them because, unfortunately, none of these large studies included a sufficient number of those men to be able to make any real decisions. The available tests are clearly less accurate, and both false positives and false negatives are very, very common, both with PSA and the digital rectal exam. I mentioned earlier that most men who have elevated PSAs will turn out not to be diagnosed with prostate cancer. Well, if you look, regardless of a man's age, in every age group, 2/3 of men who have an elevated PSA upon biopsy and further evaluation will not be found to have cancer. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they don't have cancer because biopsies are a relatively inexact tool as well. But what it means is they don't have enough cancer in their prostate gland or don't have it in the places where those biopsy needles are going in to make that diagnosis. One of the other challenges with prostate cancer is the fact that overdiagnosis is so common. And overdiagnosis meaning we're diagnosing men who, if we never found that cancer, would never knew they had cancer and would have gone on with the rest of their lives and never experienced any harms related to that cancer. And overdiagnosis is problematic because it then combines with overtreatment. The male psyche, at least the U.S. male psyche, seldom allows us to say, yes, Mr. Jones, you have prostate cancer, but you know what? You're old or you've got these other illnesses and we really don't need to do anything about it. Well, that actually is a strongly recommended approach by every major treating organization, that is active surveillance or watchful waiting, and there's a lot of evidence supporting the fact that probably 1/3 of men who are diagnosed with prostate cancer in the U.S. would be better off having nothing done about that cancer. But even though 1/3 of men are reasonably offered that recommendation, less than 10% of U.S. men are accepting that recommendation right now. That differs with European men, for instance. The large study of prostate cancer screening out of Sweden, one of the large European studies, actually about 40% of Swedish men opted for active surveillance or watchful waiting at the time of prostate cancer diagnosis. But American men simply aren't ready to put their trust in waiting, I guess. Therefore, right now, American men are, if they're diagnosed, they're very likely to be treated and treated aggressively, which then leads to yet the other problem, and that is the treatments for prostate cancer often come with onerous side effects and complications and significant alterations in men's lifestyle, in particular related to sexual health and continence, especially urinary continence. So for all of these reasons, the decision whether or not to be screened for prostate cancer is one that men should not enter into lightly. With respect to the harms, these are estimates from the Preventive Services Task Force evidence review in 2012. It was published in 2012. Again, 90% of men who are diagnosed with the disease choose active treatment, fairly equally split between radiation and prostatectomy as a major approaches. 5 out of 1,000 men who undergo prostatectomy will die within 30 days of that procedure in the U.S. 5 out of 1,000 men. So, not insignificant numbers. And then somewhere between 200 and 300 out of every 1,000 men are going to experience significant urinary or sexual side effects or complications. So, again, these complications and side effects may very well be worthwhile for a man if we're saving his life, or if there's a strong likelihood that we're saving his life. But in many instances, we just don't know whether we're actually doing that or not. And telling men, the first time many men, unfortunately, ever hear about PSA is after they have a blood test drawn in their doctor's office as part of a routine panel of glucose and cholesterol and other things, with no discussion ahead of time. And then someone calls and says, your PSA is elevated. You may have prostate cancer. What do you want to do about it? That seems an inopportune time to then start truly informed decision-making, because the ability to make objective, rational decisions once you're faced with a potential cancer diagnosis is likely significantly compromised. So the time for men to make a decision about screening is ahead of time. And again, regardless of the fact that all of these organizations have differing recommendations, the one thing that is common across all of these sets of recommendations is informed decision making. Even the Preventive Services Task Force, while saying we should not be screening men for prostate cancer using the PSA, if you look in their actual document, they say, well, yeah, but we know it's not just going to go away, and therefore this is how it should be done. And it's basically an informed decision making recommendation. Like that of the American Cancer Society, AUA. So the ACS guideline, again, last updated in 2010, says asymptomatic men who have less than at least a 10-year life expectancy should have the opportunity to make an informed decision in concert with their healthcare provider about whether or not to be screened for prostate cancer. So this decision needs to take place before blood is drawn. They need to understand what the uncertainties, risks, potential benefits are. Now, honestly, the ACS guidelines going all the way back into the late 90s have included language about the importance of informed decision making. But this is the first time that we led with informed decision making needs to take place. The other thing, as we went through our deliberations and started preparing our guidelines manuscript, there was a lot of discussion about, well, what exactly does that mean? What does informed decision-making truly look like? What are the elements that men need to be discussing with their clinicians? And we combed through the literature and realized that everyone's guidelines who had informed decision-making in there in one way or another, but nobody really went into it in detail. So we decided that we were going to take that next step. So within our guidelines manuscript, we actually went into more detail about what elements men should understand, what men and their clinicians needed to be talking about, and that included the chance that screening does increase the chance of finding cancer early, but at the same time, finding cancer early doesn't necessarily mean that we're lowering your risk of dying. If we're finding a lot of slow-growing cancers that are not likely to cause harm, yeah, the numbers look good in terms of cancer detection, but have we really changed the impact of that disease on men's lives in a positive way? Men should understand that screening also leads to a lot of false negatives and a lot of false positives. So an elevated PSA does not necessarily mean cancer, and a normal PSA does not mean cancer is not present. As a matter of fact, the largest study that has looked at PSA in a group of men over time and correlated that with biopsies was the prostate cancer prevention trial. And that study looked at a very large number of men, followed them over 7 years, looking at whether or not finasteride would decrease men's risk of developing prostate cancer. And as part of that study, men underwent biopsy if their PSA was elevated anywhere during that 7 year period. But they also did end of study biopsies on all of, or they offered them to all of the men. And a very significant number of men who were in that study agreed to have an end of study biopsy. So men whose PSA never got over 4, there was prostate cancer found at biopsy in more than 25% of those men. So men followed for 7 years, PSA never elevated to a level that would normally trigger biopsy. A quarter of them had prostate cancer. Men whose PSA never got over 1, 6%, I believe, of those men had prostate cancer at end of study biopsy. So a normal PSA does not rule out the presence of cancer, and in many instances, significant cancer. Some men should understand false positives, false negatives. Men should also understand the overdiagnosis issue that in many men, particularly older men or men with multiple other health issues, that finding cancer is much more likely to result in harm for them if they opt to be treated than it is to do them any good. And the issues of overtreatment also need to be discussed. So in addition to looking at what these core elements are, we also, in our guidelines update, point to a number of what we viewed as objective, and many of these actually well-studied, decision aids to assist men in making this decision about whether or not to get screened. And these come from a variety of different organizations, Foundation for Informed Medical Decision Making, which is well known for creating, you know, great tools, the CDC, Mayo Clinic, and others. So all of these aids are recommended as things that clinicians should be using in their office. But we also, in looking at those various aids, found things that we thought might be done differently. Some were written at a little too high a reading level. Some relied too much on numeracy, throwing a lot of statistics around. Others were just too long. I mean, one of those preceding aids is something like 45 pages. So to expect a man to read through 45 pages of stuff to decide whether or not to have a blood test may be asking a little bit much of him. So at any rate, we then set out to create our own decision aid. And this aid, I downloaded it to or uploaded it to the APHA website. So somehow I think that it can be accessed after this meeting. And it can also be accessed directly from the ACS website. And what we did with this was we actually started out trying to create an aid that we viewed as a low literacy tool aimed at men who had low literacy and low numeracy. And then we tested it in a variety of groups and found that men, regardless of their literacy and numeracy level, actually found this tool to be helpful, because being literate at the high school level doesn't necessarily mean you're medically literate. We did a few things with this. One, we tried to stay away from statistics, or when we used them, we tried to modify them. So having a PSA level, as opposed to telling men if your PSA level is greater than 4, you have a 20% chance or 30% chance of having cancer, we tried to use these sort of pictographs to give them a little more accurate or a understandable representation of what those numbers actually mean in terms of their personal risk. We also tried to simplify the messages. One of the things that's very clear is, people study the informed decision making, that whole area, is that sometimes we want to make sure we tell men everything, or we tell patients everything there is to possibly know, and we overwhelm them with information to the point that they just can't make a decision. We end up causing paralysis by analysis. So we tried to simplify the messages and put them in, you know, very clear, brief, cogent terms. We also tried to avoid language that, you know, we as health professionals have a very clear understanding of, but it's been demonstrated very clearly a lot of patients don't have understanding of. This study actually was published about a year before we published our guidelines recommendations. And looking at men who had discussions with clinicians about various aspects that may be impacted by prostate cancer screening or treatment. And as you can see, the yellow bars indicate terms that men did not know. Under urinary function, incontinence, less than 3 out of 10 men know what that means, yet that language is used very commonly, both in conversation and in a lot of decision aids and other tools that are supposed to be educating men. If we're using language that they don't understand, we're really not doing a very good job of informing them. So we tried to make sure that we kept our language simple and in terminology that would be familiar to a larger portion of men. We try to be as even-handed as possible. The ACS is often perceived as being anti-prostate cancer testing. That's simply not true. We are neither pro nor anti. We neither encourage or discourage testing. We encourage that men come to understand as much as they can about what's good, what's bad, and then make a decision on that basis. So we tried very carefully to outline what the potential benefits of screening are and what the potential harms are, again, in ways that men will be able to understand. And then finally, the other piece that is often lacking is the importance of your own personal values, because when it comes right down to it, men need to be comfortable with the decision that they make based not on what, you know, their doctor thinks they should be doing, based not on a bunch of numbers, but based on what can I live with. If I choose not to be screened and 5 years down the line I'm diagnosed with prostate cancer, you know, am I going to hate myself about that decision? Or conversely, if I decide to get screened and I find that I have cancer, one, would I be willing to even consider the possibility of not actively treating that disease? So putting all of this in the perspective before the blood is drawn, before I'm forced to make a decision, and really give men an opportunity to think about all of the elements involved, the downstream consequences of that screening decision, and hopefully give them some tools and knowledge to be able to make a decision that they're comfortable with and can move forward with. I mean, I talk to many men who just say, if there's any chance that there's cancer there, I want to know about it, and then I'll figure it out after that, and that's fine. So those men definitely need to go ahead and get screened. But then I talk to a lot of other men, including some men who have prostate cancer, who say, if you can't tell me that it's going to fix it, I don't want to know. I don't want to head down that path. So men's values and preferences, and giving them, again, some outlines around which to make some decisions in that realm. The ACS guidelines also talk about, as I mentioned, the 10-year life expectancy issue. And it's important that clinicians start taking that very seriously. The Preventive Services Task Force they actually use a hard number in their previous guidelines said that men over 75 should not be screened. In their new guideline, in terms of informed decision-making, they actually acknowledge that younger men need to look at this a little more carefully, but that older men are much more likely to be harmed than they are to achieve any benefit. And the evidence bears this out. This is one of the European studies that actually showed a mortality benefit associated with screening. But as you can see, the red line and blue line, the benefit did not begin to accrue until at least 8 years after screening began. So if you're screening men who have advanced cardiovascular disease, men who have renal failure and are on dialysis, men who are 85 years old and not likely to see 90, then, again, you're much more likely to find cancer in those older men, put them in the quandary of deciding whether or not to be treated. But the likelihood that you are going to positively impact their life in any way through that screening is very, very low. Yet I saw a study published just a couple of weeks ago that said that about in the VA population, I believe it was, something close to 20% of men over the age of 85 had been screened within the last year. So clinicians need to be taking this information a lot more seriously, and that is a group for whom actually screening should be discouraged, not just informed decision making. Let them know why. You're much more likely to have a cancer diagnosis, go through treatment that leads to incontinence or sexual difficulties or other problems, or potentially death, since 5 out of 1,000 men die. And the likelihood of you actually achieving any benefit through that screening and early detection is very, very low. So I think men are capable of making decisions if we provide them with information. The other thing that we recognized is that we're not only asking a lot of men, but we're asking a lot of clinicians, and therefore we created a tool specifically for clinicians, and this also is uploaded to APHA and can be found at the ACS website, that encapsulates a lot of the information I've shared with you in 20 minutes on one page front and back. And I believe my time is up, and hopefully that was my last slide. Okay, I saw 1, 2.
I have a question about the possibility of prostate cancer spreading to other parts of the body, since we are talking about a wait and watch approach for people diagnosed with prostate cancer. So what about the chances of metastasizing to different other body types?
Right. That's always a possibility, and watchful waiting or active surveillance is, there's risk involved because some of the cancers that appear to be, you know, relatively benign, slow growing, can fool us. So some men are going to end up with metastatic disease. But there was a study published, again, about a year ago, the PIVOT trial, that looked at true observation, which was these men didn't have any sort of active follow-up, which is different from active surveillance, where you're actually doing biopsies and monitoring PSAs. But men in a true observational cohort where they were found to have prostate cancer, opted not to be treated, and nothing was done for those men unless they started developing new signs or symptoms. Then they compared that with a group of men who underwent radical prostatectomy. And for men whose PSA was less than 10 at the time of diagnosis and whose Gleason score was 6 or less, those groups did almost identical. You had metastases that developed in a number of those men who underwent prostatectomy. And you had, certainly in men who chose watchful waiting, but the difference in metastases rate and the difference in prostate cancer-related deaths and overall deaths were almost identical for those two groups of men. So there's risk, but there's risk even if you treat it aggressively. There's risk that the disease is going to recur or it's going to appear somewhere else. Yes, ma'am.
And I know for, like, treatment, men often rely on, like, wives or significant others in making that decision, so I'm just curious to what extent you guys consider the roles of, like, significant others in the decision around even testing or screening.
Yeah, well, we encourage men to talk with, you know, those who are important in their lives, but you're right, and wives and children, adult children also have some impact there. But, I mean, ultimately, this is a decision that the man has to make, but we encourage him to talk to other people as well in order to broaden their perspective. One of the things that's been shown, at least with regard to the active surveillance watchful waiting decision, however, is many times family members will push men into getting treatment because, you know, they're afraid of losing them. And so men who might otherwise opt for it sometimes end up going into active treatment because of those outside pressures.